Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
We are finishing this week strong. Hello and welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our topic this hour is chastity in a society that, I don't know, maybe a lot of people don't want to hear about it. But the strange thing is, the more the world says it doesn't want to hear about it, the more individuals maybe do want to hear about it. What do we mean by chastity, and why do we value that as Christian people and as people attempting to be fully human people? Why is chastity important? If you have questions about raising children to love chastity and to seek it, if you have questions about living chastely in your own life, 888-318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH. And our guest this hour is the man on this topic, Jason Everett. Does a great deal of speaking and teaching on the topic of chastity. He is the author of 10 books, including Theology of the Body for Teens and How to Find Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul. Jason Everett, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on. It's good to be back.
Just to check in with you again, how's the sexual revolution going? Still mowing its way through culture, destroying lives and families?
Yeah, it's not quite looking as promising as the advocates had hoped.
But we're not over it yet.
No. I mean, we're in the thick of it. And, you know, and I'm seeing it when I travel and I speak at the high school. And I remember one kid came up to me and said, "Oh, I know what you mean, Jason, about divorce." He said, "Jason, my dad is on his ninth marriage." And
my.
I mean, these poor kids. And you wonder why the kid's doing bad in math class, you know. And so
right.
I find the young people, at least, are much more open than the older ones to hear that there's a different route that's possible.
So when someone says, "Well, why chastity? Like, why do you people bother with that? Are you somehow afraid of sex or something?" What do you say?
Yeah, well, for one, the whole point of chastity is not to repress our desires and to pretend like they don't exist and have some neurotic attitude towards this gift of sexuality, but to acknowledge the fact that, you know, we're tempted to use other people as things for our gratification. And what chastity does is it helps order our sexual desires according to the demands of authentic human love. And John Paul said it helps us have this quickness to affirm the personal value of the person when we're tempted to value them purely for their sexual value. And so it kind of frees us to love, and it frees us to know if we're being loved. Because once chastity becomes a part of a relationship, the other person's intentions rise up quite quickly to the surface. Because if they're in it for just the physical reasons, then chastity tests that right away. And so it's not this medieval burden that the church is trying to impose on couples. It's the virtue that actually frees you to authentically love.
But doesn't all the science say that you will actually explode if you are not engaged in sexual activity as an adult? You'll probably die, and it will be a painful, horrible death or something. There's an idea that being reserved sexually is going to do us harm.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been to a mortuary lately, but you know, as far as I understand, there's nobody there because of abstinence. You know?
But, died, you know, of abstinence.
Unfortunately, there's no shortage of people who are there because of a lack of abstinence.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the way our bodies are created, that, you know, promiscuity might be something we may be tempted towards, but the human heart longs for something greater than this. And, you know, there's this attitude, well, hey, you know, you need to be realistic. Kids are going to do this anyway. You know, we need to implement a comprehensive program so that these kids can learn abstinence, if that's what they want to do, but then they can learn about birth control, if that's what they want to do. And that's the healthiest approach. But the problem is, it just doesn't work. And a perfect example of this came out this last month, the Journal of Health Economics. If you want to look it up, their July 2017 edition. Over in the UK, the government spent hundreds of millions of pounds of money out there for a teen sex ed program. And with about 2007, 2008, they had to do some massive budget cuts. And so they had to take away a lot of this teen pregnancy sex strategy thing they were doing. And people feared, oh, great, you're going to take money away from comprehensive sex ed. Pregnancy rates are going to go through the roof. STDs will be everywhere. But what they actually found out is once they got rid of sex education in the schools and cut the budget, the teen pregnancy rate dropped by 42%, that they were trying to basically put out a fire by throwing lighter fluid on it. And this isn't just a failure in the UK. It's been disastrous in America as well. The CDC even said that there is not a single comprehensive sex ed program in schools that has actually shown to decrease teen pregnancy STD rates. It just hasn't worked here or abroad, because it's not the right solution to a behavioral problem.
And so, well, what about folks who will say, I mean, I have to say there's some news, and I'm not going to get into too much detail about it, about robots and people engaging in acts with robots, and some of the programming of these things is kind of horrifying. But on the other hand, well, so you said I don't want to treat the other person as an object. I want to treat them as a full human being. And if I'm just in it for physical gratification, then I'm not doing that. So what if I said to you, well, they got this robot thing that's coming along?
Yeah, the problem is that you cannot love a robot, and a robot cannot love you. It's not simply who you how you ought to behave. It's who you are. I mean, you're created for love, and anything less, I mean, you could just binge on lust in using for the rest of your life, and you're just going to end up feeling starved, because we're created to make a gift of ourselves to be received by another in love. And a robot just can't do this. This is kind of happening over in Japan right now, where virtual reality pornography has taken off. And one study even showed that 40% of young adult Japanese males are not even interested in a sexual relationship with a woman, because they'd rather just have their goggles. Because look, it's easy. There's no risk. There's no commitment. There's no sacrifice. There's no vulnerability. There's no fear of rejection. In a sense, the object of your lust becomes soulless. She has no power of who, when, where, what, why you might become intimate. No, you possess all the power, and she's simply at your demand. Shifting from that to an authentic relationship, which involves commitment, risk, sacrifice, is difficult, and a lot of people now just don't want to do it, because they've binged on this fast food idea of human love, and they don't want the demands of authentic human love. But in the end, I think they're going to end up quite dissatisfied, because that's what we're created for, is to make a gift of ourselves, not to use others or inanimate objects for our gratification.
And are there, it seems to me that I've heard about the cases where, and maybe this is very common, I don't know, but where this kind of resort to pornography, or this resort to these other non-intimate forms of physical gratification, has left some people not just not wanting other, full human relations with, say, a real woman or a real man, I suppose, in cases too. But not able to, that we can actually hurt ourselves this way.
Yeah, there's plenty of commercials about dysfunction, shall we say, in regards to the marital act, that are being triggered as a result of pornography warping the brain, that you're actually training your brain. It's called a trained response. You're like, you remember Pavlov's dog. He would ring a bell, feed the dog, ring a bell, feed the dog. And then the dog could just hear the bell ringing, and his mouth would water. This type of trained response is very easy to form in the human mind when it comes to sexual arousal. Because when you're looking at pornography or doing something like that, you're actually training your brain to associate sexual joy with dirty, illicit, forbidden sexual fantasies that are all novelty. Now you shift to a human relationship, and it's not some dirty, illicit, forbidden sexual fantasy where a spouse is a new one every week. And the mind has a very difficult time adjusting. There was a German sexologist who said that one of the key features of the whole sexual revolution is just publication of details that used to be secret. And this is what he said: sexuality has become trivialized. The interesting thing about this is that exaggerated portrayals apparently destroy desire more effectively than any repression.
That's a horrifying thought, and very sad that we fell for a kind of lie, and living that lie is actually demonstrably dehumanizing. It drains our own humanity away.
Mm-hmm. You know, as I said, you know, John Paul would always point out, it's not simply how a man ought to act. It's who a man is. I mean, we're created in the image and likeness of God. And so if we don't live in that manner, we're actually opposing our own humanity by how we live.
Jason Evert, our guest this hour for the final hour of our work week here. Jason Evert, an expert on chastity, on human sexuality, but also on how those things are integrated as part of our thriving and growing spiritually and in the fullness of our humanity. If you have questions in that regard, if you have comments, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with your calls for Jason Evert right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Bishop James Wall from the Diocese of Gallup, New Mexico. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett, host of Catholic Answers Live, and I'm looking forward to meeting you this September 28th to 30th at our fourth annual National Apologetics Conference here in beautiful San Diego. This is one conference you are not going to want to miss. The theme is the reunion of all Christians, and we've got an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to fire you up. Catholic historian Steve Weidenkopf, apologist Mark Brumley, apologist Devin Rose, plus all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. For almost four decades, Catholic Answers has been engaging our separated brethren in charity to bring them to the fullness of the truth. Join us for a lively and inspiring conference designed to help you play an active part in the reunion of all Christians. This is where it all begins. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to ignite and inform your faith. Seats are available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register.
As legend goes, it was 500 years ago that Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the door of the Wittenberg Cathedral, setting of a series of ruptures that the Church suffers to this very day. Catholic Answers Magazine is marking the anniversary with our very special issue delving deep into the Protestant Reformation. Want to be sure to get your copy? Subscribe right now to the best Catholic apologetics magazine anywhere by calling 818-487-2011 or going to Catholic.com. The heroes of the Counter-Reformation, the deadly errors of sola fide, and everything you want to know about how the Reformation played out. Just a few of the articles you can look forward to. Don't wait another moment to subscribe. Call 818-487-2011 or go to the shop at Catholic.com right now to get subscriptions for yourself and those you love. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're talking chastity this hour with Jason Evert, the man to talk to when you're talking about chastity. Jason, lots of calls on the line. How about we start taking a few?
Sounds good.
Laura in St. Louis, Missouri, listening on Covenant Radio. You are first up with Jason Evert. What's your question?
Great. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Oh, great. First off, I have to say, Jason, I am such a huge fan of yours and what you do. Thank you so much for your very important work.
Well, thank you, Laura.
So my question for you is, I'm in my mid-20s. I have done a lot of, read a lot of your work and a lot of similar Catholic chastity resources out there. A lot of it, you know, I think is geared for teens. I want to know, like, as a young adult, do you use any different language or do you speak about it in any different way when it comes to, all people, married and unmarried, but just people that are young adults rather than teens?
Yes, I do take a completely different, I mean, I would say completely different approach, but I definitely nuance things quite a bit differently. A couple examples, if you were to go to our website, which is chastityproject.com, we have the high school version of our talk, which is Love or Lust, and then we have the young adult version of the talks that we give. One is called How to Date Your Soulmate. Another one is called How to Save Your Marriage Before You Meet Your Spouse. And you can get those on iTunes and kind of hear the different style that we take with the young adult audience. But, you know, one of the things that we hit on is young adults are looking for a spouse. Many of them are wanting to enter into the to that vocation and a bit frustrated. And one of the things that I try to point out is that, you know, Pope Francis said in the Joy of the Gospel that marriage preparation, no, there was in Amoris Laetitia, he said marriage preparation begins at birth. And I think a lot of young adults think marriage prep kind of starts at the engagement. But I've done enough talks to engaged couples to know that if you wait until you're engaged to begin marriage preparation, that's not really marriage prep. That's like triage. Okay, I mean, we're really late in the game at this point. And so what I try to look at is, okay, how can we get ready if you feel called to this vocation, even before you have a boyfriend or girlfriend? What can you do in your life right now? And, you know, and so I take a look at pornography and things like that and look at the overall picture of the topic of affective maturity, emotional maturity. And pornography is a great example of this, because when we're in a lot of people think pornography, the problem is just lust. That's why I keep going back to this, is lust. I think, no, you got to get much deeper than that. Look at the roots. Like, when am I falling into these sins? Is it when I'm bored, I'm lonely, I'm angry, I'm stressed out, I'm tired? You know, when am I falling into these things? Because when the human person is going through a state of desolation, we naturally seek consolation. And a great measure of your emotional maturity is what you do in those moments of desolation. Do I smoke weed? Do I get drunk? Do I go look at pornography? What do I do to try to get myself back up into that state of consolation? Or am I seeking out authentic friendships, getting closer to my family, doing works of mercy for the poor? You know, am I doing something that's going to bring about real consolation, or grasping onto false consolations? Because this just doesn't impact, am I going to overcome my porn habit? This really impacts what kind of husband I'm going to be. Because when you get married, stress isn't going to go away. It's going to get more. Times of loneliness don't disappear within marriage. And if I haven't learned how to deal with desolation in a constructive manner, it's going to be quite destructive no matter what vocation I enter. And I find that young adults are really open to this concept to see, okay, well, wow, what I do tonight with my feeling of loneliness or whatever is really shaping the type of spouse or priest or whoever that I may become one day. And so I find that's there's any number of topics that I address with them, but I find that's one that they're quite open to hearing about. But like I said, the CDs that we have on our talk, you can on our website, you can check out to hear the full presentations that we give to that age group.
Laura, does that help you?
Yes. Thank you, Jason. And know of my continued prayers for your ministry.
Thank you, Laura. They mean the world to me.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
We'll go now to Dorothy in Rochester, New York, listening on WHIC, the Station of the Cross. Dorothy, your question for Jason Evert.
Yes. And first, I want to say I've had the pleasure of hearing Jason's presentation to a number of our area schools, and it's really inspiring the response that they have to his message of chastity and really respecting themselves. But the problem we've run into here is that a friend of mine happened to read one of the required summer reading books for her daughter going into her senior year at a Catholic girls' high school, and was shocked at the amount of explicit sex and the behavior of the characters in these books. Now, we plan to go to the school and talk to them, but is there a resource for us to find good books that these kids can be reading during the summer?
Okay, very good question. I'm sorry to hear, Dorothy, what's going on in the local school, but I'm glad the parents there, you know, are proactive enough to be looking through these things to see what they're putting in the minds of these young people through. So, you know, as you said, it's not good enough to just tell the school, hey, we think this is bad. I think it's great that you're coming up with a solution instead of just pointing out the problem. And you can tell the school, hey, you know, I'm glad you got the kids reading in the summer, but, you know, this is a Catholic school and we're not paying X amount in tuition to have our kids read this kind of stuff. So we would prefer you have them read these instead. And in that way, we won't have to talk to the bishop or anyone about that. You know, so you want to start down low before working your way up to the bishop. In terms of good alternative books, there's a woman by the name of Carmen Marcoux. She's based out of Canada, that has written novel-sized books for teens and young adults on the virtue of chastity. One of them is called Arms of Love, and so you could check that if you Google. It's Carmen, Marcoux is her last name, and she's got a couple of different books that would be suitable for the reading level example of a high school student would be, you know, rooted in God's plan for human love rather than the world's distorted view of it. Another option that I would propose to you is to reach out if you know of any good kind of classical book program Catholic schools in your area. Give them a call. I live in Phoenix, Scottsdale. There's a fantastic one called the Villa de Marie Academy. And if you were just to call up, for example, this school and say, hey, you know, can I talk to your high school English teacher? I know the English teacher there at Villa de Marie would be more than happy to say, here's 20 great books your kid's going to be reading over the summer. You know, because I'm not an English lit professor, I don't really have a great list of them, because you don't want to just give the kids chastity books. You know, you want to give them all sorts of books that'll help them to form the human virtues of honesty, of trust, of courage, and all the other things. So yeah, contact Villa de Marie Academy in Scottsdale, ask for their English teacher. I hope this doesn't trigger like 900 phone calls to the school, but it would be, I think they'd be able to give you a great reading list for those girls in the summer. Because I know they give the kids, there are plenty of books to read over the summer, and they can probably just share their list with you.
Awesome. That's terrific. And thank you again for your ministry, and we hope to get you back up here soon.
I'd love to come back, Dorothy. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Dorothy. If folks want information on all kinds of aspects of this, the question of chastity, of the means to chastity, your site chastityproject.com is a good place to visit.
Yeah, we've got all kinds of blogs that we're always putting up on there. Various resources. We've taken all the books that we create and we make everything $3 or less. And so that way, you know, a lot of educators, youth ministers and parents, you know, have great needs to spread the message of chastity, but they don't have a great budget for it. And so everything we create is $3 or less. So, you know, for that young lady's high school, you know, class, have the kids read a book of my wife and I wrote called How to Find Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul. It's a book just for young women on how to navigate through the single years of life and find authentic love. And the nice thing is you can get them for the whole class for only $3 a piece. So we've got books, CDs, blogs, all kinds of research at chastityproject.com.
It seems to me, and I wonder, I would like to get your impression of this, that there's a certain way in which the sexual revolution of the 1950s, 60s, 70s affected every part of the world, and it certainly affected the church and the institutions of the church. So that I'm sure that many of us who grew up in that period have now become school administrators, or you know, even you know, directors of offices and dioceses and whatnot, and may be somewhat accommodated to the ideas of the sexual revolution. Is that your, you know, when she talks about our school did this and that, it does seem to me that there's still, or that within the church, we haven't fully decided, I suppose, that chastity and marriage are things that we're going to go back to fully valuing.
Yeah, it's unfortunately very true. I mean, I give about 130 seminars a year in Catholic high schools and churches, and unfortunately, I can't even say on the air the things that I've seen going on in the administrations of Catholic high schools, of the teachers, of the religion teachers emailing me after the assemblies, either saying, hey, you know, your talk really hit me because I'm currently doing this and that, you know, or giving the presentation and there's faculty members in the back of the room livid that I'm actually explaining to the students God's plan for human love. Well, the students are coming up afterwards crying and hugging me and thanking me that they can start over. It's a much tougher nut to crack when it comes to the administration and the faculty sometimes. So, as you said, you know, and I feel for them, because in a sense they were raised in an era of the church where they may have been told everything they're not supposed to do. And then they get into real life in college and beyond, and they realize they've never been told actually what they are supposed to do in dating relationships. And so I think that's so important that instead of just harping on all the thou shalt nots, we need to be really teaching them how thou shalt date and court and marry.
I think that's many, many people see the message of chastity as a message of oppression or repression instead of what it is, a message of liberation.
Yeah, I remember one young woman came up to me after the assembly, and she was dating this controlling, possessive, abusive older guy. And I said, well, just break up. And she said, oh, I can't. You know, I've given him everything. And I said, look, just tell him no more physical intimacy and see what happens. And she says, okay. And she took her necklace off and she gave it to me. And I said, okay. And she said, he makes me wear this. He's so possessive. So I said, okay, I'll throw it away for you. And she left. And maybe 5 minutes later, she come back. She's skipping and happy. And she said, I dumped him. I said, well, that was quick. And she said, yeah, I told him no more sex. And he slammed his locker shut. He threw a book at me. He said, where's your necklace? She said, I gave it to the chastity guy. And you see what happened is she really tested his love. I mean, do you really love me? Do you want me? Or do you only want the pleasure that you're getting at my expense? And so we need to be able to explain chastity as this asset that liberates people not only to love, but to know if they're authentically being loved.
And it also liberates the other, the user, because, I mean, if we find, so say we are using other people and we hear this message of chastity and liberation, we find we may no longer be enslaved to passions that we thought were good for us, but actually have made slaves of us.
Yeah, without doubt, it sets everybody free.
888-318-7884. The number, chastity, is our topic. Jason Everett taking your calls right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. In a series of short, easy-to-read chapters, Trent covers the whole range of common topics, starting with why we believe in anything at all and answering all the common objections to the Catholic faith, both doctrinal and moral. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Better yet, it's only $3 a copy when you order in bulk. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Christian men, beware. With the idols of materialism, entertainment, and the flesh, it's plain to see that the world wants you for its own. Face it, it's tempting and easy to be a man of the world. Father Terence Ehrman has a challenge for you. Be a man of God instead. In his new book, Man of God, Lessons to Young Men About Life, Sex, Friendship, Vocation, and Loving with the Heart of Christ, Father Ehrman draws on his experiences counseling men who are struggling to live in the world, but not be of the world. In a unique format, he offers a plan for ongoing conversion, holy spiritual direction for all men who want to master themselves and be transformed from within. Order your copy of Man of God today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett. Join me for a show dedicated to Catholic apologetics and evangelization, as we connect viewers to prominent leaders in the church today and touch on just about everything relating to the church, from doctrinal issues to family concerns, social issues, evangelization, ethics, you name it.
Catholic Answers, live TV, Sunday, midnight Eastern on EWTN Television.
Our spectacular store-wide summer sale, our alliteration sale, is still going on. All books, DVDs, CDs, ebooks, tracks, and MP3s are on sale from 10 to 25% off, and some up to 50% off. You'll find a few there. Sale prices are available online purchases only. You just go to shop.catholic.com, and it is the best online sale of the summer. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. This hour, Jason Everett with us to talk about chastity. And Jason, we have in the studio with us a young woman who runs video stuff for us. And her name is Meg. and she's got a question for you. And Meg, you just to make clear, you've been familiar with Jason's ministry for a while.
Yes, I've been reading his books since high school. So my question is, how do I approach talking to a boyfriend about chastity when he's not a Christian?
Okay, it's a great question. Well, while you're there in the studios at Catholic Answers, they may have in the shelves back in the warehouse a booklet that we wrote called Pure Manhood. There's a Catholic version, and then there's a secular, completely non-religious version. Go back and talk to the warehouse guys and see if there's the secular version on the warehouse, and just pillage it off the shelf. Carrie and Gary won't mind if you steal things from inventory. I used to do it constantly when I worked there for 14 years. No, just kidding.
Wait a second. Hold on. Carrie, the one thing that they will be upset about is if you take inventory and don't tell them. But okay, but they'll get it for you. Yeah, Pure Manhood.
Yeah, No, I'm kidding. Definitely talk to them before pillaging any of the inventory. But it's a secular version of the booklet that makes the case for chastity for guys who are not Christian, kind of explaining it to them in an easy-to-read Q&A format. I don't know if they have any left on the site there, but or in the shop, but that's a resource to check out. But how do you talk to them about the subject? You know, one thing you could say, hey, look, you know, I like you a lot. I love you. I mean, you want to begin by front-loading with some compliments and say, but, you know, I want to fall in love with you for all of the right reasons. And the way I look at intimacy and sexuality is that sex belongs in marriage because the total gift of a person's body should go along with the total gift of the person. That I'm not going to give you my whole body unless I'm going to give you myself. And by myself, I mean my last name, my bank account, every breath I take, my fertility, my children, like the whole gift of me. Because the world talks about, the church is saying you're going too far, or the church is saying you can't go all the way. It's like, no, the church is the only one encouraging us to go all the way in the sense of making a complete gift of ourselves. It's the world that's afraid to go all the way. It's the world that only wants a little bit. I want the body, but I don't want the gift of the whole person. And she can just, you could explain to the boyfriend that, look, I give myself when I give myself entirely, not just in bits, the total person. And so I see the gift of sexuality as the ultimate physical gift that I could give to a man. And I think that that gift is going to be given when I give the gift of myself to a man. And then, you know, I think a guy would have a hard time arguing with that. And some guys will say, well, you know, we can use protection, you know. And you could explain, like, my idea of human love is one where you don't need protection. You know, you need protection when you're going into Syria. You know, you shouldn't need protection, you know, when you're in this beautiful state of intimate human love. And so this is going to be maybe a steep learning curve for the non-Catholic boyfriend, but a tremendous opportunity for evangelization for him. Because a lot of guys are willing to take risks with a woman's body. Well, you know, you won't get pregnant, but imagine what would happen just for 1 month of every year if men could get pregnant. I mean, let's say July is now male fertility month. I mean, what would happen? Most guys would be like, oh, it's a National Abstinence Awareness Month this month. I've got my pledge card and purity commitment. You know, things would change quite a bit. And so you want to encourage him to see things from the woman's perspective and understand the total gift of the body should go with the total gift of the person. But check out that booklet, Pure Manhood, the secular edition, and pass that on to him and say, read this and let me know what you think and see what happens.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
You're
Meg.
Welcome.
And Meg was saying, you said you and your friends in high school all read the book, How to Find Your Soulmate.
How to Find Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul. Yeah, we'd highlight it and then like pass it around and give it to people who weren't Catholic and like, hey, you should read this. So, yeah.
Well, thanks for passing it on, Meg, and God bless you and good luck with that conversation.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Meg.
You're welcome.
We go now to Anonymous in Washington, D.C. Your question for Jason Everett.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call, Jason. Thank you for your work. I was listening to Megan. I'm much older than Megan. I just recently read your book, How to Find Your Soulmate. So my question for you is if you have any tips. And I'll give you a brief scenario. You mentioned earlier this evening that some people may tend to watch a lot of porn and then they lose their ability to have a real relationship with a real person, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Am I understanding? Okay. So in my case, I'm asking for tips because my fiancé recently broke up with me and I resorted to a lot of, not pornography, but a lot of masturbation and sort of loneliness and being very upset. And I don't even think I'm capable of a relationship. I got just so very upset by his actions. Do you have any tips for helping me move in the correct direction in terms of wanting to, I guess, just reach out to other people again and even consider the possibility of finding someone else?
Yeah, well, first off, you know, I want to, you know, say sorry that things ended like that, but I thank you also for your courage and being able to share the fact that, look, guys aren't the only ones in creation struggling with these issues. A lot of people think, well, oh, you know, sexuality, that's a guy problem. You know, girls struggle with modesty and emotional issues, but never lust and things like that. That's not true at all. You know, lust is not a guy problem. It's a human problem. And so one thing that I would encourage you to do is try to get involved. And if there's a good Catholic, let's say, young adult group in your community, a Theology on Tap, to just start with simple friendships within these young adult communities. And just start simple. Say, you know, because you just got through a pretty tough breakup at a deep level of a relationship, and be patient with yourself. It was St. Francis de Sales who said, have patience with the whole world, but first of all, with yourself. And I think, you know, right now isn't even the right time, and I think your heart knows this, to jump into another romantic relationship. Now's the time to kind of recover, to exhale, to heal, to breathe for a little bit, to reconnect with maybe people that you became disconnected from the deeper you got into this relationship. And if you feel the need to talk to a counselor, please don't be afraid to do that. There's a website called CatholicTherapists.com. And if you go to CatholicTherapists.com and you just type in your zip code, you can find good Catholic counselors in your area. And if there's none near you, you could call virtually any on the list, and most of them, to my knowledge, will do Skype counseling, where you can find someone who maybe has a background or you seem like you can relate to and connect with them and say, hey, look, I just like to kind of talk through some of these fears that I have, because the solution isn't to lock up your heart, to say, look, I gave my heart away and it got run over, and so I'm just going to lock it up. You know, but your heart wasn't meant to live in a coffin, you know, this cage that no one else can have access to. You want to be able to trust again. But what you want the most, which is love, requires the thing you fear the most, which is vulnerability, perhaps. And sometimes a good Catholic counselor can help you to bridge that gap in time and heal those wounds so you can learn to begin to trust again. But I think a good starting point is simple friendships within a safe community, like a good Catholic young adult group, and then just take it a day at a time.
Does that help you, Anonymous?
Okay, thank you. Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Good
luck with it. Thanks so much for that call. We go now to Angie in it must be around Los Angeles, listening on 9:30 a.m. Immaculate Heart Radio. Angie, your question for Jason Evert.
Yes. Hi, Jason. I'm the mother of an 18-year-old daughter that's going away to college this fall. And again, she's 18, so she's an adult, and she thinks she knows it all. And she told me the other day she is going on birth control in case she has sex in college. And I lost my mind when she told me that, because she's a virgin, and we're pretty much a good Catholic family, but the world out there is telling her something else.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine that the news is heartbreaking for you. And one thing I'd encourage you to do with that suffering is every time it comes up in your heart and you feel that pang of suffering in your heart, to make sure to offer that suffering as a prayer that her eyes would be opened up. And when you have conversations with her, or you shoot her emails or whatever, and you discuss this topic with her, you know, one approach to take is that the woman's body is actually perfectly made. And no woman really wants to be on contraception. They might want to be able to engage in sexual acts without becoming pregnant, but no woman has ever really wanted to be at war with her own anatomy in order to accomplish that. And one thing you could do is look up whatever form of contraception she may be choosing, if you know what that is, if it's a shot or the patch or the pill, and do some homework on that. If you go to our website, chastityproject.com, and click on the tab that says birth control, go in the Q&A section and read about that specific type of birth control. Because believe me, women who go on this stuff have virtually, they don't read the patient insert packet that comes with contraception of the microscopic 17,000 word, you know, document that says all the things that could possibly go wrong. They don't read this stuff. They don't read the journal articles coming out from the Mayo Clinic saying that birth control pills increase a woman's risk of breast cancer. They don't read that stuff. So, but if you do some homework and say, honey, you know we love you more than anyone on earth, And I just want to make sure that, you know, you know what you're putting in your body, because they don't often tell you this stuff. To teach her how the contraception works in a woman's body, that the pills will actually convince her brain that she's pregnant for about, you know, 20-something days of the month. The guy who invented it realized that women who wanted the pill never had a period. And he thought, oh, they're not going to like that. They're going to think it's a natural. So he loaded into the pack of pills about a week's worth of blank sugar or placebo pills, which don't have pregnancy hormones in them. So a woman basically thinks she's pregnant for 3.5 weeks or so. Then she kicks onto the different pills. Her brain thinks she's essentially having a miscarriage. Then she has a withdrawal bleed because she thinks she's not pregnant. And then it kicks her back into pregnancy the next month. And so the woman on the pill, her brain literally thinks she's pregnant a dozen different times a year. And not only does it wreak havoc with her hormonal balance, it's actually an abortifacient as well. And so maybe if she still has some pro-life inclinations, you could point out to her that the pill, Depo, any hormonal contraception is an abortifacient as well. But maybe share with her if she's open to it. We have a CD called Green Sex, which is the case against contraception from our perspective. You could check out the CD Green Sex, or the book that Meg had mentioned earlier, How to Find Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul, has a whole chapter on loving your body and how you don't need to be on this stuff in order to plan pregnancies. That God has created the woman's body perfectly, and you don't need to resolve all those hormones. But I would also, lastly, just invite all of our listeners to pray for your daughter as well, because she might go away at the age 18 thinking you don't know a thing, but God willing, she'll come back and realize that, wow, in the span of a couple years of college, her parents actually became so much wiser as she got a few years older. So let's pray that that would be the case for her.
Angie, thanks very much. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more on the topic of chastity with Jason Everett right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Howdy, folks. This is Jimmy Akin, and I'm here to tell you about a very special promotion we look forward to every year. It's our annual store-wide summer sale in the online shop at Catholic.com. This online event features savings from 10 to 50% and more in some cases on every book, track, CD, DVD, ebook, and MP3 we carry, including my newest book, A Daily Defense. With lower prices and a great selection of solid Catholic resources, it's a sale you can't afford to miss. So log on now and all this month at shop.catholic.com and take advantage of our very special prices. You know it's all good stuff because it's from the people you know and trust at Catholic Answers. That's shop.catholic.com.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 12, the Pharisees complain because Jesus' disciples were picking heads of grain and eating them on the Sabbath. Jesus confounded such casuistry by showing that necessity excused from the law. He reminded them of how David and his men had eaten the bread of offering from the temple because he was in great hunger and fleeing for his life. Jesus then said, "I say to you, something greater than the temple is here, for the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." When one is centered on the Lord and not on oneself, he can let the chips fall where they may. He will have no fear of displeasing the Lord. Even if he should make a mistake, he can be at peace because he is acting from a clean conscience. Besides, he knows that something greater than the temple is here, and that he is living his life before the face of a loving God. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Final segment of Catholic Answers Live for this work week, 888-318-7884. The number, Jason Everett, our guest, our topic, chastity. We go now to Rosemarie in Everett, Washington, listening on 1050 AM. Rosemarie, your question for Jason.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had an incident with my uncle when I was 9 at my grandma's funeral where he French kissed me And I told my parents, and they didn't react or talk to me about it. They did keep me away from that uncle. Well, then later, a cousin looked under my blouse. He was a Jesuit school student, and I didn't tell my parents about that. And according to Dr. Weisbard in Seattle, Washington, a PhD in adolescent girl psychology, that was because my parents hadn't talked to me about the first incident, so I didn't tell them about the second. Anyway, I want to know if you discuss these things in your books with young people so that they will understand, you know, if they had things happen to them as you know, 9 and 12-year-old kids, how to process them, you know, as they're entering adulthood so that they don't just drop into, you know, what the society prescribes for normal behavior, which is 100% sexual activity.
Yeah, well, first off, Rosemary, I'm very sorry to hear what has happened to you. And, you know, in the 18 or so years that I've been traveling and speaking on this, I've lost count of how many young people we've encountered that have been through very similar situations. And one thing we tell them to do in the talks as well as in the books, for example, in the How to Find Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul book, we have a whole chapter on choosing to heal, where we explain that if you've been through any form of sexual abuse, it's almost like emotionally going through a car accident. You know, I could get in a car accident tonight and walk away from the scene with broken ribs and a cracked ankle and a concussion, and I don't have to go to the hospital. I mean, you can live with broken ribs. You can live with a disfigured ankle and a concussion. Yeah, you're going to have a pretty nasty limp and not going to be able to function 100%, but you can survive. And a lot of victims of sexual abuse are limping through life emotionally like this because they're afraid to go to the hospital. Well, if I tell someone, am I going to get blamed? Am I going to get ignored? Am I going to get doubted? Am I going to be looked at differently? Why dig up the wounds? Let's just stay away from the hospital. It's just going to be painful to relive all those memories. And we really encourage people that although it's painful sometimes to have to go to a counselor, to be able to talk to your family, that's the only way that you're going to find the fullest healing that you deserve. So you don't have to live, so to speak, with this emotional limp caused by the wound of another. And so often, people who've suffered abuse blame themselves. Well, I shouldn't have been in that situation. I shouldn't have done this. I should have done that. No, by talking to a trusted adult, preferably a parent, the parent can take you seriously, believe you, and help you to get the counseling so that you realize this wasn't your fault and that some people in life can be trusted and some cannot. And if parents don't know how to talk to their kids about this stuff, because you got to start really young, explaining to the kids that our family, we keep surprises, but we don't keep secrets, and explain to them what that means. And if anyone ever does something, you won't be in trouble if you tell us. You know, we trust you, we love you, and we're here to protect you, to really begin preemptively before any abuse can happen, so that if anything inappropriate happens, the kid will know that they can come to you and that's going to be safe. And so parents need to be proactive instead of passive, waiting for this thing to happen to them. There's books out there, you know, that help young people with the internet that parents could read to kids that, you know, what do I do when I see an impure image online? And you can read these books to your kids about those kinds of things. You could talk to the people in your diocese that work in the Safe Environment Program to say, hey, what are some resources out there that I can use as a parent to help open these doors of communication for my kids? But parents, they're the primary sex educators, not the church, not the school, not the state, and they need to be not afraid to talk about these subjects to be able to protect their kids.
Thank you so much, Rosemary, for that call, for your courage in sharing that with us. We certainly will keep you in our prayers and encourage you. Call back anytime. We'd love to talk with you. We go now to John en route, it says, to San Diego, listening to Immaculate Heart Radio on 9:30 a.m., I'm guessing, John, that you're going to Comic-Con. Am I correct?
Hey, thank you, Jason, for taking my call. And I heard you're guessing. The last part dropped out. What was the question?
Oh, I was just asking if you're on your way to Comic-Con.
Oh, actually, no. I'm on my way to San Diego State University to see my son at a soccer camp.
Oh, okay.
We live in Hong Kong, but today I find myself on the way to San Diego. And I'm so happy that there's Catholic Radio on the radio to listen to. So my question is basically about masculinity. And Jason, what are your thoughts on, it seems to me that there's been a lot of feminization over the last few decades. And do you think the way to fix that is just that we all like practice Movember year round and get the birth control pill out of the public water system?
Well, the point you bring up, some people may not be familiar with that. When contraception is taken by a woman and she goes to the restroom, water treatment plants are not designed to filter out synthetic sex hormones. And so what ends up happening is these things enter the water system. You can Google this and study what's happened in nature. For example, in Colorado, they found that downstream from the water treatment plant, there were actually transgender fish, intersex fish, male fish with ovaries, female fish with testes. All of this is crazy gender bending in the ecosystem, whereas if you go upstream from the water treatment plant, none of this was happening. And so they're able to deduce, wow, this is from all the hormones. And they asked some, you know, environmentalists, well, what do we do here? Do we tell people not to use contraception? And the basic response is basically just throw the frogs under the bus. You know, we can't tell people not to use this stuff in their bedrooms. And so, you know, we've got to have respect not only for the ecology of the world, but just for human ecology, that God created our bodies in a specific way. And when we tinker with this stuff, not only do we harm the environment, we harm ourselves. And so some have speculated that all of the synthetic sex hormones is causing men to be more effeminate and perhaps impacting sexual orientation and gender. And, you know, I think the studies, you know, may come out one way or the other in the future. But I think the confusion of what it means to be male and female right now is caused largely by the fact that young men are being raised by the internet. They don't have intact families, and a lot of guys are being raised by single moms, and so they seek to either hyper-masculinize or they begin to feminize because they don't have a dad who's present to them, teaching them how to be an authentic man. Because look, guys don't learn manhood from books, you know, and DVDs. Like, we learn manhood by being in the presence of other authentic men. And so I think the best thing that we can do for culture is just to try to be the sons of God that he's created us to be. Because I can't transmit the love of the Father until I learn how to receive the love of the Father. And so if I can learn how to have a good prayer life and connect with God in that manner, I'll be more able to image what a man ought to be by following Christ more obediently.
Thank you so much, John. We're going to keep moving because we are coming up right on the end of the hour. We go to Anonymous in Buffalo, listening on the Station of the Cross. Anonymous, your question for Jason Everett.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just wondering if you could give any advice to anyone out there who might be in a come from a similar situation to me. Thank goodness I've gotten myself back in check with chastity and the teachings of the church. But I came from an upbringing where I didn't have a father figure who was basically 24/7 around the clock giving a proper example, because he was suffering with his own addiction to pornography. And the effect on me is it skewed my image of chastity for a great portion of my life. And thank goodness thanks be to God, I got myself back on track. But what advice would you give to a woman in that sort of circumstance who, you know, might be earlier on in the stage of things? Like for me, I have a pretty solid prayer life and I'm praying for my father regularly and I forgive him for kind of, his shortcomings and his humanity. But for someone else who just might not be exposed to, you know, proper masculinity, what would you recommend?
Yeah, I've met many young women who've been in the same situation, and some of them react by falling into the same sins of the father. I remember meeting a girl, and she was probably no more than 15 years old, and she said, you know, 5 years ago, I've been addicted to pornography for 5 years because that's when I found my dad's collection. And I've looked at it every single day since I found that he looks at it. He doesn't know I know he looks, and he doesn't know that I look, but I've been addicted to this stuff for 5 years because of my own father. And so when this wound of pornography comes into the family, what it does to the father, it's kind of a blunt analogy, but it's kind of a spiritual vasectomy. I mean, his capacity to transmit the spiritual and the supernatural life to his family is cut off from him, because if he can't guard his own innocence, how can he protect the innocence of those who've been entrusted to him? And so I would take the hurt that you feel and that void that was left by the authentic, pure masculine love you were supposed to receive, and use that hurt as a fuel, so to speak, not only to continue praying for him, but to make sure that in your own life, you don't settle for relationships where this thing is a problem. Because some guys will say, hey, look, you know, I'm looking at porn, but I'm working on it.
Well, Jason, we're going to end there because we're right up at the top of the hour. Anonymous, thank you so much for that call. Thank you to all our callers. Thank you to Jason Everett. You can find him at chastityproject.com. Jesus Christ is the light of the nations. And we'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Live.